Chapter 18 Background of the Bolshevist Revolution. Because of the many anti-Jewish laws in Europe, many Jews had no property and thus were forced to travel around. Whatever country they elected to be in, they encountered a 82 closed front against them. At the end of the 19th century, Tsarist Russia was the only real obstacle left against the Illuminati ruling the world. In 1881, Theodor Herzl, a Khazar Jew, again founded the Zionist movement in Odessa, Russia, in order to create a Jewish homeland in Palestine. At a B'nai B'rith meeting in New York in 1916, Jacob Sif, president of the Kuhn-Loeb & Company Bank, was elected president of the Revolutionary Zionist Movement in Russia. On January 13, 1917, the Jew Leon Trotsky, formerly Bronstein, arrived in the U.S. and received an American passport. He was seen on occasion to enter the palatial residence of Jacob Sif. In their meetings, they talked about the Zionist unrest in Russia, also about what was learned from the unsuccessful attempt to overthrow the Tsar. Jacob Sif financed the training of Trotsky's rebels, who were mainly Jews from New York's East End and who were trained on a plot in New Jersey belonging to Rockefeller's Standard Oil Company. When they had become proficient in guerrilla warfare, Trotsky's rebels left the U.S., with $20 million from Jacob Sif, on the SS Christian Svjord for Russia, there to start the Bolshevik Revolution, so the Khazars could get Russia back. Trotsky and Lenin were both linked to the Committee of 300 by Bruce Lockhart. Chapter 19 Skull and Bones. Let us now examine a most powerful organization of the Illuminati in the U.S., the Skull and Bones Order. Its own members call it simply the Order. It has been known for more than 150 years as Local 322 of a German secret society. Others call it the Brotherhood of Death. The secret order of Skull and Bones was established at Yale University in 1833 by William Huntington Russell and Alfonso Taft. Russell brought it in 1832 from his student days in Germany. In 1856, the order was incorporated into the Russell Trust. In 1864, William Russell became a member of the Assembly of Connecticut, and in 1862 he became General of the National Guard. Alfonso Taft became Secretary of War in 1870, then U.S. Attorney General in 1876, and in 1884 U.S. Ambassador to Russia. Alfonso's son William was appointed Chief Justice and later elected President of the U.S. It is an old tradition to mark the tombstones of Freemasons with the Master degree with a skull and crossbones, a tradition also harking back to the time of the Knights Templar after 1127 AD. Perhaps the order's name comes from one of these traditions. Yale is the only university with societies that are only open to seniors. The other two societies at Yale are the Scroll and Key and the Wolf's Head. The candidates are exclusively white, male, Protestant, and usually from very rich families. Often the fathers were already members in the same order. During the last year of study they are called Knight and later, for life, Patriarch. The reunions of Patriarchs take place at the Deer Island Club in New York. This club was founded in 1907 by the Patriarch George Douglas. The Deer Island Club is exclusively run by Patriarchs, as is the Russell Trust. The most important members of the Eastern liberal establishment surprisingly have always been members of one of these societies. The Eastern liberal establishment is, according to Gary Allen, a circumlocution for the financial, political, academic and the media political mafia bossed by the Rockefellers. Here one should mention the W. A. Harriman Company. The founder of this bank, William Averill Harriman, was initiated into the Skull and Bones Order in 1913. In the 20s Harriman was the main supporter of the Russians with funds and diplomatic aid. Harriman, 83, had further support by the first Soviet commercial bank, the Ruskom Bank. Max May, Vice President of the Guarantee Trust and a member of the Skull and Bones, was the first Vice President of the Ruskom Bank. The Guarantee Trust was controlled by J.P. Morgan & Company, the partner bank of the N.M. Rothschild Bank. Some partners of J.P. Morgan were Skull and Bones members: Harold Stanley, initiated in 1908, Thomas Cochrane, initiated in 1904. The original capital for the Guarantee Trust came from the Whitneys, Rockefellers, Vanderbilts and Harrimans, all families with members in the Skull and Bones order. Percy Rockefeller was the only Rockefeller accepted. He represented the Rockefeller investment in the Guarantee Trust and was its director from 1915 to 1930. A short summary of the banks just mentioned: the N.M. Rothschild and Sons had its main branches in London, Paris, Vienna and Berlin. Already then the Rothschilds not only controlled the City of London, thus the Crown Colonies and the British government, but also French government, the Committee of 300, the Bavarian Illuminati and so all the secret lodges in Europe and the US infiltrated by the Bavarian Illuminati. Together with their representatives in the US, the Kuhn-Loeb & Company director, Jacob Siff, the August Belmont & Company and the J.P. Morgan & Company, and the M.M. Warburg Gesellschaft in Hamburg and Amsterdam, they built up, among others, Rockefeller's Standard Oil Empire, Harriman's Railroad and Carnegie's Steelworks, and thereby controlled the greatest part of the American economy. The banks just mentioned are among the most powerful in the world and are all controlled by Rothschild. And these were just the modest beginnings of the Rothschild Empire, as we are about to see. Chapter 20. And thus endeth freedom in America. Towards the end of the 19th century, the banks controlled by the Rothschilds started a big campaign to get the rich American economy under their control. Around 1900, the Rothschilds sent a further agent to the U.S., Paul Warburg, to collaborate with the banking firm of Kuhn-Loeb & Company. Take note of this name. He was yet to interlink many more organizations. Jacob Siff and Paul Warburg started a campaign for the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank as an established private central bank in America. In 1907, Jacob Siff said before the New York Chamber of Commerce, "If we don't get a central bank with sufficient credit control, this country will experience the most severe and far-reaching financial panic in its history. Des Griffin, descent into slavery." No sooner said than done. They went on to hurl the U.S. into a monetary crisis, the resulting panic at the financial market of which ruined the lives of tens of thousands of people all over the country. The panic at the New York Stock Exchange brought the Rothschilds, quite apart from a profit of several billion U.S. dollar, the success they hoped for. Cunningly planned, the panic was used as an argument for the establishment of a central bank to stave off similar occurrences. Paul Warburg then told the Bank and Currency Committee, in the panic of 1907, "The first suggestion was, let us have a national clearing house central bank." Gary Allen, "None dare call it conspiracy." The final version of the decision to introduce the Federal Reserve System, the private central bank of the U.S., was conceived on J.P. Morgan's estate on Jekyll Island, Georgia. According to H.G. Dossey, the meeting was attended by A. Piatt Andrew, Senator Nelson, 84, Aldrich, Frank Vanderlip, president of Kuhn-Loeb & Co., Henry Davidson, senior partner in the J.P. Morgan Bank, Charles Norton, president of Morgan's First National Bank, Paul Warburg and Benjamin Strong, president of Morgan's Bankers Trust Co. The introduction in 1913 of the Federal Reserve System enabled the international bankers to consolidate their financial powers in the U.S. Paul Warburg was the first chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The Federal Reserve Act was soon followed by the 16th J.P. Morgan Bank, Charles Norton, president of Morgan's First National Bank, Paul Warburg and Benjamin Strong, president of Morgan's Bankers Trust Co. The introduction in 1913 of the Federal Reserve System enabled the international bankers to consolidate their financial powers in the U.S. Paul Warburg was the first chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. The Federal Reserve Act was soon followed by the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, which enabled Congress to levy taxes on the personal income of U.S. citizens. This was the consequence of the fact that the US government could no longer print its own money to finance its operations. For the first time since the founding of the US, income tax was levied. The foremost shareholders of the Federal Reserve, the Fed, were Rothschild Banks in London and Paris Lazard Brothers Bank in Paris, Israel Moses Seif Bank in Italy, Warburg Bank in Hamburg and Amsterdam, Lehman Bank in New York, Kuhn Loeb Bank in New York, Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan Bank in New York, Goldman Sachs Bank in New York. Congressman Charles Lindbergh already then described the new Federal Reserve System as the invisible government by its financial power. How does the Fed function? The Fed's Open Market Committee produces Federal Reserve notes, dollar notes. These notes are then loaned to the U.S. government against obligations that serve the Fed as security. These obligations are held by the 12 Fed banks which receive the yearly interest payments thereon. Remarks to today's situation. In 1980, the U.S. Tax Office put the national debt at $115,800,000,000 in interest payments from the American taxpayers. This interest capital goes into the coffers of the Fed, and so to the international private bankers. In 1992, the obligations held by the Fed reached used 5,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, Commune was created by the Fed lending money to the US government and charging high interest rates for something that cost the Fed only paper, ink and printing costs. This is one of the biggest swindles in the history of the US and almost nobody notices. And so the Fed holds, via the obligations of the US government, the lien on the state and private property of the whole of the United States of America. Innumerable lawsuits have not been successful in reversing the Federal Reserve Act. There is no legal way for the citizens to reclaim the money because the Fed is not a part of the government but a private institution. Apparently, the Fed is not constitutional and should therefore not exist. 9 U.S. states have cases pending to abolish the Fed. Chapter 21: The Rothschild Towing Service. Kings and dictators were always infamous for spending more than they could squeeze out of their subjects in taxes. The nations and government then had to borrow the necessary sums from the banks. But how could the banks retrieve their money if a government could not or would not pay up? The solution is war. 85. The business of financing governments functions on similar lines as the credit institute that lends a client money to buy a car. If the client cannot pay the monthly installments, the car is recovered. And how does one recover a vehicle? With another car. The same with financing governments. You don't just lend money to one country only, you also lend to that country's enemies. The lender has to ensure that both countries are of about the same strength so that in the case of conflict, financing will be the deciding factor. If a country does not pay up, the lender will threaten it with war by another country or, if it still refuses payment, have it recovered by that other country as booty. See Machiavelli. The House of Rothschild has followed these guidelines for about 160 years now. Number 9 of the Protocols. Nathan and his brothers started this game at the beginning of last century in Europe, after they reaped so much profit from the Napoleonic Wars. At that time, something developed in Europe that came to be known as the balance of powers. In order to strengthen its position as invisible ruler of Europe, the House of Rothschild had to build up two power groups of similar strength to guarantee that balance of powers. They had to ascertain that all the A kings could be threatened with all the B kings. Naturally, they financed both sides. Then they required a third power as a kind of insurance should one of the countries step out of line. This country is Nathan's England, which thus was supreme power in Europe. The outcome of a war could always be determined by checking which side was favored by England. At the end, England was always on the side of the winner. England, or the Crown, more appropriately, had such an efficient kingdom recovery service at their hands that the power of the House of Rothschild reached tremendous heights. Around the turn of the century, it was said that they controlled half the property of the world. lends a client money to buy a car. If the client cannot pay the monthly installments, the car is recovered. And how does one recover a vehicle? With another car. The same with financing governments. You don't just lend money to one country only, you also lend to that country's enemies. The lender has to ensure that both countries are of about the same strength so that in the case of conflict, financing will be the deciding factor. If a country does not pay up, the lender will threaten it with war by another country or, if it still refuses payment, have it recovered by that other country as booty. See Machiavelli. The House of Rothschild has followed these guidelines for about 160 years now, number 9 of the protocols. Nathan and his brothers started this game at the beginning of last century in Europe, after they reaped so much profit from the Napoleonic Wars. At that time, something developed in Europe that came to be known as the balance of powers. In order to strengthen its position as invisible ruler of Europe, the House of Rothschild had to build up two power groups of similar strength to guarantee that balance of powers. They had to ascertain that all the A kings could be threatened with all the B kings. Naturally, they financed both sides. Then they required a third power as a kind of insurance should one of the countries step out of line. This country is Nathan's England, which thus was supreme power in Europe. The outcome of a war could always be determined by checking which side was favored by England. At the end, England was always on the side of the winner. England, or the crown, more appropriately, had such an efficient kingdom recovery service at their hands that the power of the House of Rothschild reached tremendous heights. Around the turn of the century, it was said that they controlled half the property of the world. Chapter 22. Cecil Rhodes and his Knights of the Round Table. In his book None Dare Call It Conspiracy, Gary Allen writes, "The Round Table organization in England grew out of the lifelong dream of gold and diamond magnate Cecil Rhodes for a new world order." Rhodes' biographer, Sarah Millen, was a little more direct. As she puts it, "The government of the world was Rhodes' simple desire." Quigley quotes, "In the middle 1890s, Rhodes had a personal income of at least £1 million sterling a year, which he spent so freely for mysterious purposes that he was usually overdrawn on his account. Cecil Rhodes' commitment to a conspiracy to establish world government was set down in a series of wills described by Frank A. Delotte in his book American Rhodes Scholarships. A. Delotte writes, "In his first will, Rhodes states his aim still more specifically: the extension of British rule throughout the world. With English as the world language, the foundation of so great a power as to hereafter render wars impossible and promote the interest of humanity." The Confession of Faith, part of the Testament, enlarges upon these ideas. The model for this proposed secret society was the Society of Jesus, though he mentions also the Masons. Gary Allen continues, "It should be noted that the originator of this type of secret society was Adam Weishaupt, the monter who founded the Order of Bavarian Illuminati on May 1, 1776, for the purpose of conspiracy to control the world." The role of Weishaupt's Bavarian Illuminati has long been recognized as models for communist methodology. Weishaupt also used the structure of the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, as the model, and rewrote his code in Masonic terms. 86. A. Delotte continues, "In 1888 Rhodes made his third will, leaving everything to Lord Rothschild, his financier in mining enterprises, with an accompanying letter enclosing the written matter discussed between us. This, one surmises, consisted of the first will and the confession of faith, since in a postscript Rhodes says, 'In considering questions, suggest take constitution of the Jesuits if obtainable.' Apparently for strategic reasons, Lord Rothschild was subsequently removed from the forefront of the scheme." Professor Quigley reveals that Lord Rosebery replaced his father in 1888. Rhodes made his third will, leaving everything to Lord Rothschild, his financier in mining enterprises, with an accompanying letter enclosing the written matter discussed between us. This, one surmises, consisted of the first will and the confession of faith, since in a postscript Rhodes says in considering questions suggest take constitution of the Jesuits if obtainable. Apparently for strategic reasons Lord Rothschild was subsequently removed from the forefront of the scheme. Professor Quigley reveals that Lord Rosebery replaced his father-in-law Lord Rothschild in Rhodes' next and last will. The secret society was organized on the conspiratorial pattern of circles within circles. Professor Quigley informs us that the central part of the secret society was established by March 1891, using Rhodes' money. The organization was run for Rothschild by Lord Alfred Milner. The Round Table worked behind the scenes at the highest levels of British government, influencing foreign policy and England's involvement and conduct of WWI. William Bramley writes about the Round Table group, "Rhodes was certainly on the right track. If he had reached his goal, many of the negative effects by the network of the Brotherhood of the Snake might have been undone. By a world language, the detrimental effects touched upon in the story of the Tower of Babel, having to do with people talking in different tongues, might have been reversed. Fostering a feeling for world citizenship would help to overcome the forms of national socialism that helped to unleash wars. But something went wrong. He thought of realizing his objectives via a network of the corrupt Brotherhood of the Snake. So Rhodes set up institutions that ended up by falling into the hands of those who would use these institutions for the suppression of humanity." Chapter 23: How to Stage a World War. The creation of the German Empire under Bismarck upset the balance of powers that had been existing in Europe for more than two centuries. England ruled supreme over the continent until 1871. This supremacy had been repeatedly challenged by Spain and by France, but England always remained victorious. The fact that Germany now grew stronger, by acquiring colonies and by building up its military force, was a severe threat to the Illuminati, but also to England and its supremacy over Europe both economically and militarily. To counteract this, the international bankers, who at that time were to a large extent excluded from the economic development in Germany, sought for ways to limit and control Germany. Between 1894 and 1907, a number of international treaties were signed to have Russia, France, England and further nations unit against Germany in the case of war. It was the task of the Committee of 300 to set the stage for the First World War. From the Round Table group emerged as a front the Royal Institute for International Affairs (REIA). It is also known as Chatham House and had among its founding members Lord Albert Grey, Lord Arnold Toynbee, eminent scribes of the MI6, H.G. Wells, Lord Alfred Milner, head of the Round Table, and H.J. Mackinder, inventor of the so-called geopolitics. From the Committee of 300, the REIA got the order to study possible ways to stage this war. The order was handed to Lord Northcliffe, Lord Rothermere, both members of the Committee of 300, and Lord Toynbee of the MI6. The research was done in Wellington House, where brainstorming sessions developed ways and techniques to condition the public into supporting a war. 87. Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann were American specialists attending. Lord Rothermere used his newspaper as a tool to try out their social conditioning techniques on his readers. After a test period of 6 months, they had found that 87% of the public had formed opinions without rational or critical thought processes. That was what they wanted. Thereupon the English working class was subjected to sophisticated propaganda methods to convince them that they had to send their sons by the thousands to their deaths. In America, President Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th Rothermere, used his newspaper as a tool to try out their social conditioning techniques on his readers. After a test period of 6 months, they had found that 87% of the public had formed opinions without rational or critical thought processes. That was what they wanted. Thereupon the English working class was subjected to sophisticated propaganda methods to convince them that they had to send their sons by the thousands to their deaths. In America, President Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th president, said during his election campaign in 1912, "Behind the visible government there is an invisible government upon the throne that owes the people no loyalty and recognizes no responsibility. To destroy this invisible government, to undo the ungodly union between corrupt business and corrupt politics is the task of a statesman." Dieter Rugbeck, J. Politik, p. 75, Chapter 24. The First World War as seen by the Illuminati. At the beginning of the 20th century, the world appeared to be at peace. But behind the scenes, preparations were well underway for a bloodbath the world would not forget for a long time. The Illuminati had recognized that in order to fulfill their plan for a new world order successfully, they had to create such a state of devastation that no nation would remain untouched. Most historians agree that the cause of war was actually a rather trivial dispute between Austria and Serbia. The assassination of the Austrian heir to the throne, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and his wife Sophie by the Serbian nationalist Gavrilo Princip of the occult secret society Black Hand is Sarajevo sparked the First World War. This was used by the Hidden Powers to realize the world war that Albert Pike had predicted more than 40 years before. Since the events of that war are generally known, I would like to concentrate here on the Russian side. Despite having the largest army in the world, Russia was desperately under-equipped for any sizable action. Before fighting started in 1914, the Crown had promised Russian its full support and military help in the case of war. After the war had begun, that help was reduced to 10% of its pre-war level. Apparently, the financial monopolists wanted to force Russia into as dangerous a situation as possible, in perfect agreement with Pike's plan. At a time when millions of Russians had already died on the battlefields, the Rothschild agents compounded the problems by their activities. Their endeavors, following the Illuminati's philosophy founded upon misery and insecurity, to set the stage for a revolution following the German defeat, was successful. The revolution started in February 1917 when the Tsar was deposed and a provisional government under Prince Georgi Lvov took over. This government, however, did not succeed in staving off the national decline. Here I would like to continue the chapter background of the Bolshevik Revolution. After Trotsky and his rebels had left New York on the SS Christiania Fjord with $20 million in gold, the boat, chartered by Jacob Suf, was held up on April 3, 1917 by the Canadian authorities at Halifax, Nova Scotia. The Illuminati plan seemed doomed. But Jacob Suf and his Illuminati friends in the US government and in England exerted their influence, and soon the voyage could continue. After arrival in Europe, Trotsky went to Switzerland to meet with Lenin, Stalin, Kaganovich and Litvinov and to coordinate their strategy. 88. Perhaps it is interesting to note here that the heads and agents of all the nations involved in the war could meet in neutral Switzerland. At the Congress of Vienna in 1815, after Napoleon's defeat, Switzerland was restored. The Confederation was guaranteed neutrality forever by the powers of Europe. An accident? Or does not such a safe place in the center of Europe fit the plans of the parties living off the war perfectly? As Dr. Coleman proves in his books, the black nobility plays the main role behind the Swiss theater. Now the conspirators faced the question of how to get the rebels and equipment from Switzerland to Russia. The answer was furnished by the Rothschild agent and chief of the German secret police, Max Warburg. He had them all packed in a sealed railway carriage and made sure this passed safely through Germany to the Russian border. When the train stopped in Germany for the first time, two German officers got on to escort it. They had been commandeered by General Erich Ludendorff. Max Warburg was the brother of Paul Warburg, the first chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank. In July 1917, the conspiracy supported by the international bankers suffered a first setback, and Lenin, another famous Khazar, had to flee with a few others to Finland. But in November 1917 they were finally successful. And no wonder, if we look at the financial support they had following their training in New York. During the bloody civil war that ensued after the Bolshevik Revolution, Lenin was the undisputed leader of political activities, while Trotsky organized the military arm, the Red Army. That name was not an accidental choice. The Bolshevik army under Trotsky was the deadly instrument of the Khazar international bankers controlled by the Rothschilds, equals Red Shield.